Hello, everyone. All right. Good to see you joining us. Hi, Gino. All right. This is great. Everyone, I should say hello to everyone. Tammy, oh my gosh, we got all these wonderful folks here. Lisa and Ann and David and others I can't see. Kathy, hi, Angel, Christina.
Hello.
All right. Well, this is Thursday, August 17th, 2023. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and we are on our third Thursday World Peace Diet Circle Zoom call. I want to thank all of you for taking time out of what I know are very busy schedules to be here. We normally start this at 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time, and go for, at the most, an hour and a half. And so we'll go ahead and jump right in. So the last 2 months we have had special guests. We had, I think it was 2 months ago, we had Dr. Armaiti May talking about, she's a vegan veterinarian and health activist and freedom activist also. And we had Mike Young with us last time in July talking about the all this work he does in Florida, which we are participating in. He puts on about, or he has been putting on, I think, like over a dozen, maybe 15 veg fests in Florida and the southeastern states, and he's doing a cruise this year, which Lisa is involved with, I know. And so we can hear more about that. But basically, the format for this, for those of you who are new, it's I usually give a we do a short meditation in the beginning, and then we really open it up for your questions, comments, concerns, if you have any. I have things I'd like to sometimes cover. And as always, every month there's a lot of news and things we can talk about relating to veganism and freedom and spirituality and so forth. So this is a pretty much wide open forum. We have a first Thursday of the month, which is more of a meditation and focusing on spiritual issues primarily. This is more open for whatever you'd like to talk about. So let me know. And remember, you can press star 6 to unmute yourself and speak. If you're on the phone, I think you can do that also on your computer. And go down below to where it says reactions, and you can raise your hand if you, or I think you can unmute yourself also. So, but let's go ahead and have our meditation time. And then we can go ahead and start with our gathering. So feel free to make yourself comfortable. We have three more meetings. This one, two more meetings after this one, when we'll be able to be here. Well, Madeline and I will be home, and I can sit here at the piano, which I really love. After that, we're going to be leaving in early November, so we'll be in our van. And we won't have the piano anymore, but it's so great to have this, I feel. All right, so let's just begin. We'll do a short meditation to join together. And so, give thanks for this beautiful moments on this beautiful planet Earth. We give thanks for all of the living beings who are celebrating their lives here, for all the human beings, the whole human family. We give thanks for all the animals. We give thanks for the children of all species, for the amazing creative beauty that surrounds us everywhere, that lives within us as every cell and organ. So we allow ourselves to enter more deeply now into our time of meditation, filling our heart with a feeling of gratitude for all of the opportunities that we have during this human life to awaken and to learn, to grow and to contribute, to be part of a movement of joy and freedom, of compassion and empathy, of justice and liberation, of kindness and respect. A movement that's in alignment with all the wisdom teachings of all the traditions. So we allow every breath now to flow in a calm, relaxed way. It's breathing and giving thanks. We give thanks for the sun and the moon, the stars and the sky, for all of our loved ones and all the teachers in our lives over the years who have brought us to this point, all the experiences we've ever had. We give thanks for all of them. They have brought us to right where we are right now, which is the perfect unfoldment of this lifetime. For this being, and so we give thanks also for each other, and for the whole community of activists, for vegan living and freedom and for justice and for environmental sustainability and health in our world, and those who have gone before us, those who are yet to come. We give thanks for the underlying harmony, the underlying luminescence. Great peace and harmony and joy that give rise at every moment to us and to this world that we see apparently arising in our consciousness. Now to go deeper into the silence of our own hearts and minds as we move from gratitude into the sense of loving kindness for the being that we are, this beautiful expression of life, the unique being. And gifts and abilities and perspectives. Sending love and appreciation to this unique being. And we give thanks not only ourselves, but for all those who are in our life. Sending love to all beings, to the human beings and to the animals, than those who may be difficult for us, radiating loving kindness to all forms of life, knowing that we all have the same source. Expanding spheres of light, knowing that the entire creation is saturated with love and kindness, with benevolence and goodwill, the great love that is source of all life and the sustainer of all living beings. Every breath now we engender in our heart a feeling of compassion, yearning that others be free from suffering and from the ignorance that causes suffering, and the yearning to act to help relieve their suffering, to awaken ourselves so that we can actually relieve the suffering of others. Breathing and radiating compassion and just visualizing the whole world is encircled by compassion. Every inhalation we engender in our heart, the feeling of joy, the great joy that is the essence of awareness. When we are free from delusion, from clinging to the ego, then we are established permanently in joy. Every exhalation, we allow this joy to overflow from our heart, breathing and radiating joy. To every dimension of life on this earth, knowing that joy is actually always present. Deepest level. We're abiding in our true home of joy. Seeing all beings liberated into the awareness of joy. And now finally we open to the great peace and harmony and hearts, knowing that right now in this moment, which is the only holy moment, is right now, we are at peace. So with every exhalation, faith out and send peace, harmony, and serene contentment to all living beings, to every human being. And we see the whole earth now bathed in the light. Abiding in our true home of peace. Abiding in love, abiding in compassion, abiding in joy. Abiding in peace. And seeing and knowing that every cell in our body and every organ and system, every dimension of all of our affairs is also bathed in the light of peace and harmony, in wisdom and truth, in freedom and abundance. And that we are here as part of the awakening of human consciousness on this earth to co-create a world that reflects our true nature, that there is one life flowing through all manifestations. Especially now send our love and our thoughts for healing and awareness to all of our brothers and sisters in Maui, especially in Lahaina and other areas that were affected by the recent fires. We send, of course, our love and compassion to everyone who's experiencing fear or pain, human beings passing into and from this world, to all the animals, especially the animals who are imprisoned and abused for food and other products, for research and for entertainment, for any use whatsoever. We send our love and our forgiveness to all perpetrators, knowing that in the fullness of time, we are awake beyond. These delusions of consciousness. So in closing, thanks once more to all of the teachings, all the teachers in our lives. Give thanks knowing that there are others, that we are a family of committed pilgrims on the path of awakening, the benefit of all beings. May humanity continue to work together to build a more enlightened society that cares for everyone, for all living beings, that reflects our true nature. We give thanks, knowing this is so, and so it is. Thank you, everyone, for joining together in our meditation time. I just really love this piano. I feel so grateful we discovered this. This is Yuma. Yuma is a magical piano. I heard somebody say the other day that in the old days, Yamaha would make an entire piano out of one tree somehow. I'm not sure, but this must have been an amazing tree. So, thanks again for joining us. We are delighted to see your shining faces. And as I was saying before our meditation time, we are going to be leaving in less than 2 months, I mean a month and a half, whatever it is, in early November. I guess let's say that's two and a half months, I guess. And we're going to head out on a more northern route. I'm not sure if any of you are affected by that, but we're going to be going out through Reno and Salt Lake City and Rocky Mountains, Denver, Boulder, into Kansas, and seeing our good friend Judy Carman doing some events. All along the way, we have events lined up already in Moab, Utah, and bunch of places. I can't remember. Boulder, Denver, another city in Colorado, and so if you know anybody along the way, we're going to be going to Ohio, across Missouri, Wichita, Kansas, and so we haven't done this since COVID, and all the way to Cincinnati and Columbus and Cleveland, all the way up there, and then down to Virginia Beach and down to Wilmington, North Carolina. We've got things lined up there, and then into Asheville, North Carolina, probably South Carolina, Hilton Head, and then back to good old Florida in December, around Christmas. For Christmas, for Hippocrates, we're already on the schedule at Hippocrates for about 6 weeks, I guess. Again, Christmas, we do the piano music and everything for their Christmas celebration, and then we give lectures and concerts. So Madeline and I are making preparations for that, and actually we're leaving right now. Today's Thursday, so tomorrow is Friday. We've got our local farmers market where we've been selling our nectarines and some of our cherries and other things. Today we were just harvesting almonds and what else, Madeline? I think peaches and apricots from our trees. And I was up there hanging from one limb and from the other trying to grab almonds. It's good to be an acrobat when you have to get up there in these trees. But and then on Saturday, we're going down to Mill Valley, which is just north of San Francisco, and giving a lecture on veganism and health freedom, which is kind of exciting. I get to do that. Some local activists are putting that on, and that's actually the 19th, and then the 20th, we're going out to Walnut Creek and giving a talk at the Unity Church there and a workshop on intuition. And the 20th of August, 2023 is the 30th anniversary of getting married to Madeline. Madeline and I getting married. I always say the smartest thing I ever did was marrying Madeline, even more than going vegan. I mean, going vegan is right up there too. But so Madeline's been cooking up a storm today, because making this wonderful thing. It's actually as part of Madeline's intuitive kitchen. We made a video of this a few years ago. It's called the vegetable quesadilla, and it's so great because we can eat it tonight, and then we have leftovers for Sunday after the workshop. She's always thinking ahead. You know, she's a really good Swiss, so everything's planned and organized. Days, weeks, months, years ahead, she's got it figured out. So, but she's right here, and do you want to talk a little bit about your quesadilla and intuitive cooking and things?
Hello. Hello, everybody. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the vegan quesadilla, I'm so low here.
You can make it good.
I'd like to be a little higher.
Oh, I can pull it down.
Yeah, good.
Is that better?
Yeah, now I feel more in the picture. Yeah, I'm talking into here. Yeah, so the vegan quesadilla is really so delicious, and you can see it on our channel, YouTube channel. It's very easy to make. It's very wholesome. Lisa has a big smile on it. Did you ever do it? And yeah, it's very easy, really, to make it. And we had it a few times. It's one of Will's favorite to have the quesadilla. And I feel like I like to pass this on, the really delicious veganism. It's the meals are so delicious, so beautiful to look at, and like I said, easy to make. So I really tell you, make something now and then. Yeah, from the whole channel.
You have a whole long list.
Yeah, I have about 50 different recipes and walks through the food forest, and also some creative, beautiful things to do. So
you can put the iPad on the counter, right?
Yes, you can put the iPad on the counter. I actually here our vegan freedom group likes the frittata, vegan frittata. So they always ask me to do it again, and like the first time I had to do it again, I actually had to look up my video how to do it. I forgot to do it correctly. So I had my iPad on the kitchen counter and all my accoutrements, and I just swing it around, and there it was, and everybody loved it. And so it's easy. You can just follow me while you're doing it and stop and go on and stop and go on, and then even taste it. So it's very nice to do. And I like the mud water. How many of you, I see the pictures, did make the mud water? Oh, yeah, you did, Lisa. That's great. Was it delicious?
Mushroom powder.
Mushroom powder and cacao and dates and all that. It's so delicious. We drink it actually every evening. We make it a little, not too liquid, a little thicker. And I say, it's like a dessert. It's a wholesome dessert. And it's very healthy because the mushrooms, there are 7 sacred mushrooms, and some are good for thinking, some are good for the heart, some for the nerves, some for sleeping, and all this. So to make this a habit is a great thing to do. So I can just suggest that.
For respiration.
for respiration, actually, too. Yeah, yeah. All right. I don't like to babble on too long. So now back to Will. He has a lot to say. And yeah, thank you so much for listening to me. And see you again.
All right. Thanks. I've got my, this is one of my favorite T-shirts. I don't know if you can see it here. Says vegan, life is better. we both got one of these vegan, life is better T-shirts when years ago when I spoke a lot on the cruise. It was the cruise that there's a Taste of Freedom or Health of whatever it's called, Taste of Health cruise, and some friends of ours just gave it to us, and so then we went to the Grand Canyon. I don't know if you heard the story, but we went to the Grand Canyon, and we went there with our RV, and we were wearing our vegan life is better. And I remember people would say, "Is that really true? Is vegan life really better?" We said, "Yeah, it's really true." And then I remember, it was so great because we walked around, and the main trail that goes down. From Flagstaff, I mean, you go from Flagstaff up to from the south side. There is called the Bright Angel Trail, and it's so interesting because when you're at the Grand Canyon and you're walking around on the rim at the top, it's this vast canyon. You know, it's so huge, and there's these signs everywhere that say danger warning. Never ever attempt to walk all the way down to the river and back up in one day. People die trying to do that. Don't ever do it. Don't do it. Don't try to go up in one day, you know. So I said to Madeline, "Yeah, I'm going to try that." And so I was wearing my vegan life is better shirt, and I ran down to the river, and there was a sign there that said no swimming. So I took a swim. And then I came back up, and I was actually back up on the rim again at, just before noon for lunch. And Madeline said, "Wow, you did that so fast." And I said, "Yeah, you know, I mean, if you're a vegan, it's no problem. You know, if people who are eating, you know, all this saturated fat and cholesterol, they probably would have a heart attack and die. But when you're eating the food we're designed for, you know, we have energy. We can do all kinds of things. So, you know, we really should take it to heart, like what Madeline was just saying. You know, food is really medicine. You know, good, and when we're eating the foods that we're designed for, and which means basically questioning everything in our society, then we find that our health gets better. Not only our physical health, but our mental, spiritual health, our cultural health. So I just want to underline that what she was saying, it's really a nice thing. You know, we put up these YouTube videos. We deliberately refuse any monetization. I don't want any money from YouTube. I really don't like them, actually. But it's nice that we have, she has all these videos of preparing vegan food, and it's all intuitive. So there isn't so many cups and teaspoons and tablespoons, but she just shows you how to do it. And yeah, I say, I'm so lucky to have all this great food. I have to say that's really true. So thank you, Madeline, for all this great food. And all these videos, so feel free to partake of those. All right, so that's kind of the beginning. Oh, then I didn't quite finish. So on the 20th, we're in Walnut Creek at the Unity Church, like I said. But then on the 21st of August, some of you maybe already know this, but that's going to be, I don't make a big deal about it, but I'll just mention it anyway. That's going to be my 70th birthday. I can hardly believe it, but I'm going to be 70 on that day. So time flies, I'll tell you. but it's great. You know, I have to say, you know, I never went vegan to do for my health. That wasn't my purpose at all. I really did it because I didn't want to contribute to the misery of animals and starvation for humans. But I have found one of the wonderful side effects. You know, drugs have side effects, right? Well, veganism has side effects too, and one of the side effects is fantastic health. You know, it really is, especially if you do a whole food organic plant source diet, you know, without the vegan junk food. You know, stay away from that stuff, really. It's a some kind of a communist plot, I think. All this vegan junk food everywhere. And it really reduces, I think, the vitality of people, and also makes us look like we're a movement that's based on, all we care about is eating, and we're a bunch of gluttons that only that orient ourselves around food all the time. I mean, we eat because we need to eat, right? It's not that big a deal. I mean, we're not just, our lives aren't oriented around some kind of food fixation. I mean, it's ridiculous. But on the other hand, you know, we can create foods that are healthy and nutritious and sustainable and aesthetically pleasing, you know, beautiful. But I really don't think we should be, we should be very, very careful about turning it into a pleasure trip, you know, because quite honestly, that's one of the main traps in our society is, and not just our society, probably all societies, is this idea somehow that we're entitled to pleasure all the time. Like we're, life is about pleasure. Life is about convenience, pleasure, security, safety, comfort. I mean, that's terrible. I mean, all those things really destroy, in many ways, our mind, our consciousness, the adventure that we're here on this earth to take. And so, Buddhism is really based in many ways, and I think Christianity, I think all world religions are based on the wisdom that freedom comes from liberating our consciousness from craving for things outside of ourselves. That something outside of me is going to somehow make everything okay. Some kind of relationship, some kind of a job, some kind of a food or money or whatever it is. We have to realize what we are is complete. And that's the beautiful thing. When we understand that what we are is whole and complete and doesn't need anything outside of us to bring happiness, we're already happy. If we really knew who we are, what we are, we'd be really happy. We wouldn't need anything outside of us to make us more happy. But we can certainly have deepened that with relationships, and we can help contribute to the happiness of others, and can help free our others from delusion in some ways, but only to the degree we do that ourselves. And I think this is so lost and forgotten in our society that somehow we've made a god out of personal pleasure and comfort. And we see technology as the way to do it, right? We love scientists and doctors because if we have anything, we go to the doctor and he gives us a pill. Oh, thank you. We don't have to take responsibility for our health. And scientists have given us solutions to our problems, we think. And when we look carefully, I think it's important to realize that we are getting more and more harmed by these so-called solutions, and we're getting less. We have all these labor-saving devices, time-saving devices, and we're fatter and less in shape and have less time. So my vision of the future, of a positive future, is very different from I think most people. Most people have some kind of an image of some kind of high-tech, futuristic sort of Star Wars, Star Trek kind of future that we're going to be inhabiting, and I think that'll be a prison. If we ever, our technology is basically for creating prisons. I mean, ask cows and pigs and chickens how much better their lives are because we have more technology. Now, they'll tell you it's much worse. They're more horribly abused than ever because of our technology. And it's the same. It's going to be the same for us. I think we should really go back to good old self-reliance and hard work and growing our own food and not being afraid to be cold and hot. And all this other stuff, this softness is really devastating. And the yearning for pleasure, the desire for more, all of those things, it just creates a capital, the capitalist system, it just feeds on creating never-ending desires. And then the more we go after those, the more we are imprisoned in a system. We need to make the money. We need to follow the rules. We need to get vaccinated if we're going to do that, right? All these things. And pretty soon, if we lose our health, we lose our freedom. And those two things are completely connected. And this whole course of this right now, I think, is one of the reasons the vegan movement is so important, is to reduce our health. You know, to make our health. If we're less healthy, we're much more in the hands of the plutocrats who are running the show. And the plutocrats, you know, there's only a few that control. Do you realize how few it is, really? I mean, if you think about it, it's really amazing. I mean, we have 8 billion people on this planet, and yet if you just take 1/1,000th of 1% of that number, that's 8,000 people. You know, 1/1,000th of 1%, those 8,000 people, they completely control the 8 billion. And because they have the money, and money translates directly into power, directly. And it not only power, but into narrative control. They control the narrative. They control the story, and so when you control the story in people's minds, they control our mind. They control people's minds. They tell them what they have to eat, what they should do, what kind of medications they should take, what's happening with the weather. I mean, everything. It's all completely controlled by 1/1,000th of 1%, and actually a lot less. I mean, if you go probably 800, probably, I mean, even less. So it's amazing, really. It's quite amazing. But the only reason that's possible is through technology. Right? Technology makes it possible to track everyone, to control everyone, like we do with animals, like we do with livestock. And they look at us like we look at livestock. So if we want to be free, we have to free animals. And that's the underlying message, actually, of my new book, which is at the publishers right now. I'm waiting for the publishers, Vegan Publishers in Boston, Massachusetts. And they have the manuscript, and so I'm waiting for them to tell me if we can go ahead and send it to the printers, what we have to do. And so in the meantime, I'm working on it and kind of fine-tuning it. But it's I think it's really important for our society. You know, this message, this basic message, to me, it's so obvious that if we're going to insist on enslaving animals, what right do we have to be free? I mean, all we're doing is enslaving and mistreating and abusing and exploiting millions of animals every day, and yet we think we have some kind of God-given right to be free ourselves and healthy and happy when we inflict misery and torture and death and destruction on millions of animals completely unnecessarily every single day. And so until human beings face up to that, and until we, you know, snap out of it, waken out of that, we're going to find the same thing happening to us, and we can see it all the time. We force medicate them, we get force medicated. We force them to, you know the whole thing. So I think that's really the message that is empowering and liberating, and the beautiful thing is it's not difficult, really. I mean, it just means eating some rice and beans and grains. It's delicious. It's not even complicated, actually. There's a little bit of a learning curve, but I think in the last few years, the vegan movement is still growing. I think it's still growing. It's still vital. It's coming under an increasing attack, though. And like all liberation movements are under attack from the inside and from the outside, all kinds of ways. So it's important for us to be vigilant and really not just take at face value anything that we read in the media, because it's mostly all lies. So I'd like to see if people have questions. There's plenty of things I can talk about here. There's so much has been happening in the last few weeks. Even, I mean, this whole thing in Maui and other things. But let's see. I see here. Okay, so Davi says, could we mirror our YouTube over on Odyssey? Yeah, maybe we can look into that. That's not a bad idea. I know YouTube is getting more and more tyrannical. What about electricity, Will? I understand. This land in the redwoods he saw destroyed for electricity poles. I was so sad to see these trees destroyed. How can we get around electricity poles? Is that what you... Well, I don't know. I mean, I think... yeah, as soon as you have... all kinds of things. I mean, the funny, you know, there's this recent headline that Scotland, they just cut down 16, you probably saw that, they cut down 16 million trees in Scotland in order to clear the land to put up windmills. And then there's another article, I think I put it in the, you know, about it takes literally like 3 or 4 tons of balsa wood, you know, many trees, to make the windmill blades on one windmill. I mean, these windmills are incredibly devastating, and they don't last that long. And then what do you do with them? You got to throw them away. It takes a huge amount of petroleum to make all the metal and everything to make these things. I mean, green energy is far more environmentally devastating than petroleum ever could dream of being. You know, green energy is really environmentally devastating. Batteries are just horrible. I mean, cobalt, nickel, lithium, these mines, all these kids slaving in these mines in Africa, and there's not enough. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, there's never going to be even close to enough metals to make batteries for everyone to run their cars on. So basically, this whole thing of green energy, it's just a scam, just to lock everybody down into a prison cell, because you won't be able to go anywhere. So if you can't go anywhere, ask cows and pigs what it's like when you can't go anywhere, where you have to stay in one place. That's called factory farming of humans. That's what they're up to. You know, and most vegans go right along with it and say, oh, yeah, I care about global warming, and I'm going green. I mean, I think it's good to go green. I mean, we're, you know, in our own way, on a decentralized way, as much as we can. You use less energy, and as much as possible, have it be renewable. That's what we're doing anyway, and grow your own food, and just reduce your footprint. And we can all reduce our footprint. The best way is going organic, vegan, and growing your own food, and then working together with other people. These are great questions. Let's see, Gino, you have your hand up, so go ahead and unmute. And
thanks, Will. Thank you. Same here. You know, I am an activist in terms of being right there to protest, and I've been doing this for years. And your statement of the vegan movement is growing. So help me out here, because I want to believe that. But in the midst of my activities and seeing all the people that are around in the public and so forth, and the scorn that they give us and the snarky comments and the yelling at us and all of this stuff, you know, when you're exposing yourself to this a lot, you have to wonder, after all your hard work, you know, is anything really changing other than, let's say, a vegan burger at, one of the fast food places? And then another example is, it was earlier this year in Utah, they had a trial for Wayne Shung and Paul Picklesinger, and because they had taken, they rescued a piglet from one of the big farms, huge industrial complex. And their justification in the trial was that because we have the right to rescue, you're breaking the law, we come in and we took the piglet out. Now, it's great for the piglet, of course, but it's also part of the movement to show, hey, this is what's going on here. Okay, so miraculously, in conservative Utah, they won the trial. It was wonderful. And then, a month later, the Utah legislature passed a law saying, sorry, you can't use that as a reason to go into the farms. Forget it. So, you know, it was like for naught, almost. So, yeah, when I keep seeing all this stuff, you know, sometimes I feel, yeah, it's growing, but if it's growing, it's going terribly slow from my standpoint. So what do you have to say?
Yeah, thanks, you know. I understand, and I think I don't have any definitive proof, and maybe I shouldn't say I do think it's growing just because, at a deep level, human beings are vegans. I mean, I think nobody gets up in the morning thinking, I want to torture animals. I mean, very few people do that. So it's just where people are so asleep, they're just robotically behaving and thinking in ways and perceiving the world through a lens that's not of their own choosing. They're just in it. So I feel like, I mean, when, like before COVID, I was really feeling like the vegan movement was growing because I could see it, you know, happening. We would travel the world and we saw these veg fests go from 5,000 to 10,000 to 15,000 to 20,000, and the number of vegan restaurants go from, you know, 10 to 20 to 50, you know, in a city and all over the world. It was happening. Europe and Asia and the United States. COVID, I think, really divided the movement and also confusing a lot of people. Vegans were always, I think, had a moral high ground, pretty much. I mean, we've always had a moral high ground, and we've been about not just being, liberating animals, but being healthy and being environmentally sustainable. And the globalists, I think, have been able to weaponize some of these issues, and vegans just felt vegans were too gullible. You know, vegans were really very gullible, really pathetic, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
So they kind of went like our natural allies are the medical freedom people, right? The people that care about freedom. I mean, without freedom of speech and of the press and of assembly and of bodily autonomy, we can't do a dang thing for the animals. You know, we can't do anything. And yet vegans were rolling over on their bellies saying, oh, just take away my freedom because I'm afraid of the virus. You know, I mean, it was the most cowardly, pathetic display of stupidity I can even say.
But, thank you. I agree.
Oh, it was like really disappointing. And it's still going on. I mean, it's still right. happening. I still can't speak, you know, most of the major cities because they say I'm an anti-vaxxer. And what I say to that is, yes, I'm anti-murder, I'm anti-rape, I'm anti-exploitation, and I'm anti-vax, right? I mean, it all goes together. I mean, it's the same thing. And, vaccinations are destroying the very foundation of our society, from my point of view. I mean, it just destroys our health. If you don't have health, you don't have anything. But the vegan movement, we've been, the big pharma has been our enemy for decades, right? I mean, you go, big pharma is doing vivisection, torturing animals for every single drug, for every dang thing they do, they're torturing animals,
mm-hmm.
on a massive scale, millions of animals, and so why is veganism, it's crazy that what happened, and then so there's that, and then also. The food, I mean, because Bill Gates put some money into Impossible Burger or something, everybody loves Bill Gates, like he's some kind of great vegan, which is ridiculous. He eats a huge amount of meat, far from being a vegan, but not only that, he's promoting Roundup, I mean, glyphosate, and just the most toxic, devastating, environmentally and culturally devastating policies are coming out of the Gates Foundation and what they're up to with the Rockefellers, just basically enslaving humanity is what they're up to. And again, it seems like the vegan movement, just the natural allies we would have, now hate vegans because vegans, number one, promoted getting vaccinated and wearing masks and all that stuff, and then now vegans are promoting genetically engineered frankenfoods that are supposedly, plant-based, and
terrible.
Because it's plant-based, right? And so now, and that's worse for the movement in a lot of ways because when people eat that stuff, they say, well, I tried being a vegan, and it didn't work. I was eating all the vegan foods. I was eating, Impossible Burger and all these things, the really good vegan foods, and, I was so sick, and I felt terrible. Of course they did. It's all fat and chemicals. It's not a bunch of junk. That's not vegan food. I mean, vegan food is whole grains and beans, legumes, and potatoes, sweet potatoes, and fruits and vegetables and mushrooms and food, real food. I mean, there's so much you can choose from. But these processed foods, and so again, our natural allies, people that really care about health, care about organic, care about these things, they look at vegans like we're the enemy. And in many ways, the vegan movement did that. We didn't stand up and speak out enough, I don't think. I mean, I tried it, and I got so attacked for even trying. So I think, that's part of the problem. The vegan movement really got attacked from outside and from inside. It got infiltrated, I think, by big money. That's been that happened even before COVID. I mean, like, I remember when they gave $1 million to Mercy for Animals, they gave $1 million to the Humane Society, and Mercy for Animals, especially before that $1 million, they were pro-vegan. And after they got $1 million from the Open Philanthropy Project, then they changed their whole campaign. They said, we're for cage-free eggs, you know, buy cage-free eggs. I mean, there's just as much cruelty in that. So it's easy to buy out these. It's really not difficult with money to buy a narrative and to buy a movement. And then a lot of the vegans themselves became, you know, unwitting infiltrators by bringing in, by reading the mainstream media and believing it and then enforcing it on everybody else. So, yeah, it was kind of tragic. So I still think at a deeper level it's growing, but I think it's like the environmental movement's been co-opted. The women's movement has been really terribly co-opted, especially by the trans movement, by everything. These movements get co-opted. The peace movement, I mean, all the movements, they, you know, because the whole idea, as you probably are aware, is if you're only 1/10,000th of 1% of the population and you want to control everybody else, you've got to control the narrative. But you also have to control the counter-narrative, right? You have to control the people who are opposing you. And so that's, they put a lot of energy into that, and controlling the counter-narrative, and that's called controlled opposition. So they control not only the narrative, but they control the opposition. And so veganism is the main opposition, right? Veganism is freedom, health, sustainability, justice, love, spiritual awakening. I mean, veganism is the biggest opposition that the globalists have, and so they are really trying to do whatever they can, I believe, to destroy veganism. And so we have to understand that. We can't be gullible. We have to have some street smarts and understand we're at a war here. They're trying to destroy our movement, doing everything they can, shutting down restaurants, getting us fighting with each other, dividing us. So we have to try to keep united, but we can't. But we got to tell the truth too, and remember the animals. I mean, the animals are suffering, but remember also if we continue to enslave these animals, we're sowing the seeds for the same thing to happen to us. So you're right. I don't. You know, it's just a feeling I have that it's growing. You know, it's always hard to know what the heck this movement is doing, because the only way you can really tell. I mean, one way you can tell is by surveys, but the surveys are kind of notoriously inaccurate, because you don't know if people, when they tell that, when they answer a question, are you a vegan or not? They may say yes or no. You don't know. I mean, depends. It's hard to know. So, but you're right in the sense that I think that we've lost a lot of momentum because of COVID, and now now it's more urgent than ever, I think. So thanks.
Yeah, I mean, during COVID, I live in San Diego now, and there are various groups here, activists, and they did nothing. They all, and like you said, they got on board with the whole thing, but also we didn't do any protests or anything for at least 2 years. I said, wow, this is just not right, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, and everything you said, I'm on board with. Thank you for that.
Yeah, okay, great. Let's see, we've got other people. Let's see, Anne and Tammy. Let's see, go ahead, Anne. I guess your hand is up. Are you there? You're not.
Can you hear me?
Oh, here we go. Okay, yeah, I hear you. Yeah.
Okay. A couple of months ago, I learned of a movement, an organization that to me seems to be making some progress as far as holding psychopaths accountable. And I feel like we need to find a way to go, like, directly address some of the psychopaths and all the different levels down the pyramid that are pushing these agendas against life, against humanity, against animals. And the way it's being done is by creating notices of liability. The person heading this is Cal Washington. I don't know if you've heard of him.
No.
You haven't heard of him. Okay. I can send you, his website is called In Power, and I can email you, you know, a link and some information. But basically, Cal, through years of experience with the court system, has come to understand that the laws under which these elitists, psychopaths, whatever you want to call them, are operating is law merchant. And law merchant is something that is, goes back, way back, possibly even to Babylonian times. And it's, so I believe, I mean, I come to believe that these people operate under these laws, and it's documented in the Bible, if you view the Bible as a contract. Okay. Mm-hmm. So by our virtue of our being born and given a birth certificate, we become merchants. We become the property, and we are the legal fiction. And we are required to, okay, we are being controlled under those rules, but most people aren't aware of that. So if you learn how the rules of law merchant work, then you can learn how to challenge these people who are causing so much harm. So I don't know if I'm sort of given too much information at once, but basically notices of liability are being prepared by individuals and sent to very carefully selected, it may be CEOs, it could be the king, it could be Bill Gates, somebody, I mean, at all levels of this whole pyramid, notices which compel them to, first of all, state that it looks like, let's say the vaccine, for example, it looks like this shot is causing harm. I observe this and this and this. It looks like this is causing harm. So we would like you to prove to us that it is safe. And since these things are all meant to harm, it's impossible for them to prove that it's safe. But we ask, okay, please prove to us that this is safe by a certain date. And if proof is not provided by this date, then we start billing them.
Right. I think, I know what you're talking about. I mean, I know this idea, what you're saying, that we have, we're all born into a system where we're property, basically, and we're used by those, and you can actually, make sure you mute yourself if you, it's good. I think it's good to make an effort to understand the legal system and how it's being controlled by a few people. The banks. I mean, the banks are controlled by just a few people.
Right. This is how they got so rich.
Right.
And
there's courses you can take online that really teach you the whole thing. I haven't done one. I have friends that have done it, and they. We have friends right here in where we live who have taken themselves out of the system, in a sense. Like, if you really do it right, you don't have to have a driver's license, you don't have to have a car, you don't have to have a license plate, you don't have to have anything. You can just live sort of completely out of the system when you really know what you're doing. But it's definitely a learning curve and an education. And I like the idea of holding them to account and letting them know that we know what the game is that they're playing. It goes back a long way. I think it's definitely something to look into and learn more about. But I think, you know, it takes us into a whole other thing. And maybe send me an email and with some of the links, and I can put it up on our resources. For other people.
Well, because it is causing resignations. Quite a number of them at various levels. Mm-hmm. And if the person that receives this notice, resigns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well,
it goes to whoever they put it. Okay, so somebody is then put
so
in
then
their place.
Realize. Yeah, so
and
then
the notice goes to that person.
Mm-hmm.
So it scares them. There is evidence that it really scares them because it goes back to, I mean, it operates in different jurisdictions, including the spiritual jurisdiction, which is like above and outside the statutory court system. So
well,
it really
yeah.
rattles them. It rattles them. And it's like taking supports down, you know,
mm-hmm.
of like promoting the 5G thing and the geoengineering. And so anyway, I think it's quite powerful.
Right. Thank you, Ann. Thanks. That's a whole other thing. But thanks.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
It
Tammy,
is. It's a big
go
thing.
Ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Will. So, yeah, I just really want to say that I know you're not an egotist, but I really put you, I said this a number of times, I put you on the top of the ladder in terms of veganism. I mean, you're right up there with Gabriel Cousins. But because the thing is, like, I've been a vegetarian 19 years, and I started learning about this when I started, 25 years ago. But it's almost like, being a vegetarian, okay, you do it because, okay, you're horrified by the cruelty to animals or others because of the health or the environment. And the spiritual, I mean, you really do cover all the bases, but the vast majority of vegetarian and vegans, they don't understand all the, as you said, how corrupt the medical system is and the banking system. You know, it's almost like it's like it's too much. It's like, well, you think this is bad? It's not just you see the slaughterhouse. How many times do you have to see that? You have to meet a chicken, a turkey, a cow, a pig, which most people have never met in their whole life. You know, this connection.
At a sanctuary.
That's why I'm saying the vegan movement gets cut in half because they don't understand. I respect it. I've read your book and I study it because I think that, it was one of the real foundations of understanding what's going on. But if you just look at one part of it, which is what most vegans, they may just do it for environmental reasons and health reasons, and they don't want to learn about the animal I know how important eating organic is. I've read a couple of books about that, so I just want to throw that out. That's what where the movement is. I mean, because you're really you and others are I think touching all the bases, and people be a vegan, that doesn't mean they see what's going on in
right.
all the areas that you talk about in depth and research.
Thanks, Kenny. Yeah, you're right. I think that's an important thing. I'm calling it deep veganism, trying to see the bigger picture.
Yeah. Spiritual.
It's a spiritual dimension, right. Okay, Tammy, go ahead. Thanks.
No, thank you. Thank you, Will, for this circle, and thank you, everyone, for being here, and happy anniversary, and congratulations on your book.
Thank you.
I find that I can get emotionally overwhelmed if I focus on too much at once. And so for me, that, that teaching of attachment versus non-attachment, to the outcome. And I, like I said, I really appreciate your circle, even the reminder, because I'm away, at my partner's family's house, and it's weird being with, non-vegans and the comments that you get, even if you're
right.
At home and you're just, your presence is enough. So that sometimes I catch myself, getting a little bit attached to wanting to eat something a little heavier and stuff like that rather than my whole food diet. So thank you for that. That I don't have to go into that. But I guess what I'm asking is just, Gabriel talks a lot about the power of meditation, and lives it and how much change is made. And I kind of feel that that's where a lot of my longing, like if we talk about individuality, like you did on your, like our individual divine lights of God, that we bring to the world. I feel like all of us kind of come with a different area that we really have our strengths to bring forth, and not everyone's frontline workers. And, I try that in social work. So just maybe the power, maybe you can just speak for a couple minutes of the power of just really going into where we feel, what, our connection is with people, whether it's, for me, it's I'm really enjoying these podcasts I'm doing, keeping it really neutral. And I need to just show up often as a quiet presence. I can't really be shoving against things all the time. So just kind of where we fit, you know, and being okay with that in the vegan movement. Because otherwise, I find I start to get a little bit ungrounded. So,
right. Okay. Well, yeah. Thanks, Tammy. I'll just maybe say something I've said before, which is I think it's, you know, we're all, I think, somewhat infected with a virus of comparing and judging, you know, when being raised in our society. And we tend to compare ourselves with others and judge ourselves and judge others and make judgments about what's, you know, what's helpful, what's not helpful, what's effective, what's not effective, what's better, what's not so good in terms of vegan activism, for example. And I think that's one of the reasons I've never really criticized anyone's activism. I think, you know, there's so many different ways of doing vegan activism. And as long as I think if someone wants to go out and make a hullabaloo and really, you know, jump up and down and get people angry at them, maybe it's not a bad idea, you know. And other people want to work politically work to change laws, and other people want to do cooking videos, and you know, there's 10,000 different ways of bringing this message, and usually. There are these larger organizations that people sort of look up to, like PETA and whoever they are, different Mercy for Animals and different groups. And very often they, or writers, well, you know, people who are respected will say what they think is a better way of doing vegan activism than something else, or animal liberation activism. But I just think, we don't know. No, we don't really don't know what works better than something else. I mean, it's really not. And in fact, what I would say, quite honestly, is I don't even like the idea of veganism being a movement in the sense that that gives it an idea that we've got a product that we have to sell. You know, we've got like, I'm vegan, you're not vegan. I've got this great product. I want you to buy it. I'm going to try to convince you to buy my product. And I have to be, you know, I have to, you know, be someone you like so you'll buy my product. I mean, it kind of reduces veganism or animal liberation to this commodity that we're trying to pawn off on other people and make the movement grow through selling it off. And I quite honestly, the longer I'm in this, trying to do this, I've been trying to do this for 43 years now, so trying to sell this product. But I think it doesn't even work that way. I think really what it is, it's an inner transformation. And an inner transformation cannot be sold to somebody else. You know, really, quite honestly. I mean, even trying to sell it. I mean, I know people take these trainings, like the S training and other transformational trainings. You pay $500 or $1,000, and you get transformed in a weekend or something. but I wonder, really, even if that is all that effective. So I think ultimately, we're each one of us is born in this particular unique lifetime with particular lessons, and they may be totally different lessons. You know, somebody might be born to learn what it's like to have lots of money and power and how to deal with that. And somebody else might have already done that in 5 lifetimes, and now they're being born to be an impoverished woman with 10 kids that she doesn't, can't take care of them. And, you know, and that's, you know, and they're here to learn completely different lessons, and we can't say that one is a better lesson or a higher calling than anything else, because it's a really very personal, individual, I guess is a better word. What a lifetime is all about, you know, what this lifetime is about for me. You know, I can't say what it should be for you. And even we ourselves as individuals really don't, it takes a lot of meditation to really connect with the deeper calling of what our lifetime is here on this earth. So that's the main thing, I think, and to realize that you can never know what's better than or bigger than something else. I remember when I was in a Tibetan Buddhist center, the Lama there couldn't speak very good English, and I wanted to do something really big, and so I was translating this book, and I was going to present it to the Dalai Lama, and I got into some kind of a conversation with him, like I wanted to do something big or something like that. And I remember he got really, you know, animated. He said, "Who knows what is big is big?" You know, I never forget that. Who knows what is big is big? You know, basically, you know, you don't know. Something that's very small might be much bigger than something you think is big. So, I think the most important thing is to just have integrity in our own process. Be authentic. You know, the more we're authentic and speak our own truth and live our own life, we don't have to justify it to anybody. You know, ultimately, I mean, just to ourselves. And then try to embody what veganism is, which is love and respect and compassion for other living beings, and do the best we can to exemplify that and share that message without trying to change people. Because that, you know, as soon as you try to change people, they fight back, and it's even worse. So to change ourselves, that's all, I keep coming back to that. That's the hardest thing, but the most important thing. So I don't know if that's helpful, but that's how I'm responding to that. I noticed we're getting kind of late here, and I wanted to respond to Angel's question about Maui. you know, the thing on Maui, from what it's still very fresh and everything, but to me it has all the earmarks of a psyop, a control, you know, of another part of the war against humanity that's being unleashed by the plutocrats. And there's quite a few things that make it kind of obvious. I mean, the fact that the sirens were never used, that they have spent millions of dollars on, that there is the water was never, you know, people turned on their hoses and there was like no water. The power was out. They couldn't, there was no, you know, no electricity or, you know, from early on. I mean, and then the fact that the fire department showed up at 9 o'clock in the morning and put out the fires and then just left. And I mean, the fires really, you know, they were still smoldering, and they were totally against all protocols to just leave, but they did. They just left. And then when the fires came roaring back with these winds, I mean, of course, Dane Wigington of Geoengineering Watch did this whole thing about how the winds were controlled through weather warfare. They brought the winds in, and the whole thing was started by arsonists, and then they had the winds that they controlled, and they rampaged through, and then people were trying to escape, and they couldn't because police were blocking the main road, and this guy was walking. I saw this interview with this guy. He was walking, this old guy. And he said he was walking by all these cars, and no car could get out. And people were literally burning to death in their cars because the cars were all stuck. And he walked all the way up to the very first car that wasn't going anywhere, and there was a cop there, a policeman. And the policeman wouldn't let anybody go by him. And the guy said, "Why are you doing that? Why won't you let any cars go by?" And he said, "I got my orders. That's what I'm supposed to do." I mean, come on, you got to be kidding me. And so, but that's all these things happen, and children. I mean, all these children that burn to death. They're not releasing the numbers, but a lot of children burn to death because the schools were closed and they were home and their parents were at work, so they were home alone in their houses, and this fire came roaring, like in just a few minutes, and burned down like 2,000 houses, and the entire town of Lahaina. Well, I've been there. We gave a lecture there, and we've given a lot of lectures in Lahaina. It's a beautiful little town, and all these kids were burned alive, you know, in their houses, and they're covering it up. They don't want to tell anybody what really happened, and so there's, you know, a massive, and then of course the fact that the governor, his name is Green, is, you know, he vowed just a month before to turn Maui into a green zone, you know, like, which is basically into a prison with 15, you know, you can't drive anywhere. Everything's going to be electricity. You're going to run everything by electricity. Like, where are you going to get the electricity to do that? Where do you get the electricity? They don't talk about that. Like, well, we're just going to have it all on electricity. It's going to be green. Well, how do you get it? Like, where does it come from? Oh, you know, it just comes. It's lockdown. They're going to lock everybody down. And then Lahaina was owned mainly by the old Hawaiian people. And by people, you know, they didn't have they don't have insurance. They don't, you know, they've been wanting that land for decades. these rich globalists to, you know, to build things. It's a, you know, Maui is an incredible tourist attraction. I mean, people fly in. They don't fly to Honolulu. They fly into Maui. And they spend millions and millions of dollars there. And Lahaina was just owned by small-town people who couldn't be controlled, and they wouldn't sell. They wouldn't sell to these billionaires no matter what. They wouldn't sell. So they burned them out. So I think, and it's part of an agenda, and they then they can blame it on climate change. Oh, it's because of, I just saw that today. This guy said, well, how can you question climate change? Look what happened in Maui. I mean, you got to be kidding me. How can we be so stupid? But, you know, they do this over and over again. And so the question is, you know, what to do in that situation? You know, what do the people on Maui do? And we were talking about how in Toronto there was an effort to create this futuristic kind of green city part of Toronto, and where Google was going to be in charge, Google, and they were going to have facial recognition everywhere, and they were going ahead with it. And luckily, some local people had a big uprising, and they said, "Wait a minute, this is going to be a prison. This is going to be a total dystopian nightmare you're creating here." And they got it stopped. They got it stopped just through yelling and screaming and making a lawsuit and everything. So I think, quite honestly, the people in Maui, these government officials who are behind all this, and whoever it is, that, I mean, it's the rich people are behind it probably ultimately, but they have to be, we have to be outraged, quite honestly, I think. I mean, when parents have, you know, their kids are being killed or burned and their houses are being destroyed and so forth, we can't just let it happen. I mean, we have to really be outraged and in a way that's effective. I think, you know, that's maybe the only thing these people understand. We have to, like, people have to really unite and in large numbers have to understand that this is a deception. You know, this whole thing is a deception, just like 9/11 was. I mean, all these, there's one deception after another. And they use these, it's called a false flag. You know what a false flag? A false flag, you know, it's when pirates, when they saw a ship that they wanted to plunder, say it was a Dutch ship, they would fly a Dutch flag, you know, or a British flag or something, so that the ship would think, yeah, it's a friendly vessel, until they got close enough, and then they would take down the flag and show their true colors, and then they'd go on board and kill all the people and take everything. So these false flags, that was a false flag. You know, they made it look. And weather warfare has been something that's been going on for decades. I mean, Lyndon Johnson, back in 1962, he said that he who controls the weather controls the world. So I think that's what it's going to take. People have to mobilize in large numbers and demand a change. Or, you know, threaten to bring out the guillotines, right? I mean, you know, people are killing people. You have to be held accountable. So I'm just kidding about the guillotines. But I think, you know, the government should be afraid of the people. The people shouldn't be afraid of the government. And this is ridiculous. I mean, that we're so afraid of the government. That's what this whole thing has been about for quite a while. So, okay, I got a couple more minutes. David, you had your hand up. Did you want to ask a question? Or?
Yes, I will. Thanks. A point well taken about the willful and woeful ignorance on the part of many people, most people, including vegan activists, so-called. Activism over the past few years has became all about got to wear a mask, got to get your shots, and, you know, screw the animals. And if there was any actual activism, it was all about, you know, look at me, I just got my shots. But the confusion about these things, of course, was the seeds of that was planted long before Quack did. It was, you know, kind of just brewing, and to this day, people still, like vegans on social media, will still quote Jane Goodall. And even the Dalai Lama, they're not vegan, and they even said so, we are vegetarian. And so, but they perpetuate this confusion to the point where most people, including some vegans, think that they're kind of the same thing. They think vegetarian and vegan, they go, vegan, vegetarian. No, there's no such thing as vegan, vegetarian. It's either you're vegan or you're not. And so it's this confusion is very, very purposeful to keep us in fighting and not knowing what's what, and then being kind of lulled into our ignorant states, thinking we're doing all the right things, but we're just not using our brain. We're being really stupid. And so, I don't know, that just, nothing new. It's just something I had to say.
Yeah.
You know, but the main thing is vegan and vegetarian, two different things.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Right.
Yeah.
Thank you, David. Yeah.
Sure.
Well said.
Thank you.
Well said. Yeah. That's one of the most important things. I think people don't realize that, well, we do, but most people don't realize. They think vegan, vegetarian is kind of the same thing, and it's so different. I mean, the foundation of the motivation is completely different. We're really
right.
About animal liberation. And so thank you for that. All right. So it looks like, let's see, any other questions? We're getting really to the down to the wire here, but it's been great. Okay, one more person here. Is this go ahead, iPhone. I think it's Andy, I think. But
yes, it's Andy. Hi, they shut my video off. okay, so I wanted to say something. It's, you know, I was driving, and as I was driving to my destination while on the phone call, our whole, on Coast Highway in Encinitas, complete redesign. Since 2020, they locked everybody down, people bought all the BS, and they completely started the redesign of our roads. We're literally almost completed with this 15-minute city here, and it's like people don't even notice. It was never announced on the news. But what I was doing, I was busy fighting every day. I was out every day. I was doing my flyers. And so if people are interested, some things that they can do, because I had my general flyer of resources. It includes things like, you know, Rumble or Odyssey, so your non-censoring resources. And then it's got a list of people, of course, Will, you're on the list of a resource, but also like Dr. Michael Yeadon, Carrie Mullis, you know, a whole list of people, you know, where people can look up in non-censored areas, and then all of these people or organizations where they can look up things. And what I started including on there also is Catherine Austin Fitz for a financial whistleblower, and Rosa Corey, who wrote Behind the Green Mask, because she exposed how our homes will be stolen from us. So I point out these resources, and what I started doing that other people can create their own flyers and do the same thing is when you see construction workers, stop them and tell them. And the same thing with these fires that you were talking about, like in Maui and every place. When these police are doing this everywhere, this has been going on for years, where they're, I don't know if they're called the energy weapons or whatever, where they're starting the fires and all of that, and intentionally having the police not allow people to, you know, save their own vehicles or their animals, going back to their homes, everything. So if you can always, if people can have flyers of resources available for these people who are following their orders, these authority figures who are not allowing people to drive or who are creating these, you know, redesigning the cities, and every single time you see someone, stop and give them flyers and point out to them and say, you know, this is going to happen to you. You're doing this to other people right now, but the very fact that you are doing this to other people right now, a lot, like what you were saying, not allowing them to pass through, you know, and they're just saying, I'm just following orders, remind them and point out to them on the flyer, here, check this out. This will happen to you. As long as you are allowing this to happen, this is what's going to happen to you and your family also. Is this what you want done to you? But give them the resources so they can check things out themselves.
It's a good idea, having some good websites, because otherwise, if people are just listening to the TV,
mm-hmm.
they don't know anything. I mean,
but to stop those people who are causing the changes who don't realize what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah, thank you for everything, Will, as
all right.
always.
All right, Andy. Thanks. I'm reminded of what Upton Sinclair's famous line, the hardest thing in the world is to convince some, is to get someone to understand something when their salary depends on them not understanding it. So people's salary very often gets in the way of their understanding. Madeline, are you there? We're going to go ahead. I want to thank all of you for joining us. We're really at our time limit, and we'd like to honor the time limit because I know people in other – and thanks, Davi, for joining us all the way from England. I know it's probably, 2:30 in the morning or something outrageous, but we always enjoy having you with us and your presence. And so let's say our prayer together. I know some people couldn't make it, but they're going to listen to our recording, and like quite a few people, actually. So we hold them in our thoughts now, too. Okay, so let's all unmute if you can, or if you feel like it, and we'll say our closing prayer for the benefit of all beings. Here we go. Ready? One, two, three. Compassion circles the earth for all beings
everywhere.
Wonderful. Again?
Compassion
circles
the earth for all beings
everywhere. One more time with feeling. Here
everywhere.
We go. Compassion
circles the earth for all beings
everywhere.
All right, we love you. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. And
thank you, Will and
Will.
Happy
anniversary.
Happy birthday.
And happy birthday, Will.
Thank you.
Happy Thanks birthday.
So the eternal moment of now, Will.
Today's birthday, every day. All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.